Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, from a rather grisly grey and damp Birmingham in the UK. It is Monday, the 11th of June. I nearly got back to front then and said the 6th of the 11th, but I would be nearly 40, very nearly 40 if that were the case. And this is Deborah at The Real Raw. And it's an exciting week and it's an exciting show because this is our first Monday that we've ever done. I say we, actually it's just me. The lovely Vicky is in America somewhere listening in, I'm sure. And I'm joined by a friend of mine, Tim Hodgson, who we're going to be chatting to in a little while, about change. I thought, what a great topic to actually start off the show with, really, because this is, as I say, the first week that we actually go live with three shows a week. So up until now, as you know, we've had our Wednesday lunchtime, which is still carrying on. You don't get rid of us that easily. The two crazy chicks were still together on a Wednesday. And we've now got me on a Monday and Vicky on a Friday. So you can't get away from us. We're there everywhere. Before you know it, we'll be taking over the world. So change, lots and lots and lots of them happening, going on in my own life. And I attribute quite a lot of that actually to what's been going on with The Real Raw and the things that we focused on over the last few months. And one of the reasons that I chose it as a topic is because Tim, who's a friend of mine, was posted an absolutely brilliant blog the other week, about 2 weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago now, about change and how we cope with the process of it. And I'd been thinking about this first show and thinking, it's going to be really boring if it's just me sitting there talking for an hour. I really need to pull my finger out and actually get a guest on. But what do we want to talk about? And I read that and I thought, how perfect would that be? You know, what a great topic, because it's something that is common to all of us. We all, obviously, you know, change is the only constant in life, and it's something that we all go through. And sometimes it feels easy and exciting and good, and other times it really doesn't. Other times it can be really, really challenging, and we're, you know, it's like we're holding on to the old stuff with our every sort of ounce of strength that we can muster. And the waves of change are pulling at us and trying to drag us away from that, and we don't want to go. It's not always nice. So yeah, we're going to talk about change. So Tim, if you're there, if you're out there in the ether, I would
I'm
like
out here
to
in the ether.
Hello. So
how are you doing,
everybody, this is Tim. I'm great. How are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Good, good, good. So change. Wow. So what inspired you to write your blog?
Well, I think one of the things I'd started to do was to listen to what was going on around me. And your story is incredible because you are going through so much change. It's actually quite inspiring to listen to everything that's happening for you and all the adventures that you're doing, the ones that come to you unexpected and the ones that you engineer as well. And I found that an awful lot of people were going through exactly the same thing. I had so many people. Now, I don't know whether this is the transit of Venus or the alignment of the stars or the fact that it's changeable weather. I don't know whether there's anything that we can attribute it to, but everybody seemed to be going through it.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. And I, having listened to folks and heard some of their stories, I realized that I just wanted to be able to put something out there that helped them a little bit.
Yes.
Because this stuff's scary sometimes, isn't it?
Oh, terrifying, isn't it? Especially, I think, when it's big changes and it seems to be, it's almost as if sometimes everything can change at once.
Yes.
In lots of, I mean, if you think about, I know, I'm sure a lot of the listeners will be familiar with, will have heard of maybe the Wheel of Life or the idea that our life can be segmented into these different sections. So you've got, you know, your family life and your relationships and your work life and your finances and, you know, your hobbies and whatever and your own growth. And, you know, I think if one area changes, we handle that pretty well. You know, it might not be comfortable, but if everything else, if the status quo is still there, it's okay. But it seems, doesn't it, at the moment that for so many people, the jobs are going, the relationships are changing, the house is being, you know, I don't know, demolished from under you. You're breaking your leg, you know, everything's happening at once. And it seems to be happening for a lot of people. And then how do you handle that? How do you, you know, what is there to hold on to when everything around you is changing so quickly?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that happen, aren't there? Sometimes the change is the change that we engineer and we create in our own life. We set out to do something different. We become dissatisfied with where we are, with the status quo.
Yeah.
Fed up with sitting on the planes, and we make something happen.
Yes.
So we hand in our resignation, or we decide that a relationship's no longer serving us, or we decide that we're going to go for a promotion, or something. We engineer change. We move house. We do something because we like to have change in our lives. It's strange, isn't it, actually?
Yeah.
The one thing we want is security. We want to have a good income. We want to be safe. We want to be secure. And then suddenly when we've got all of that, we want to throw it up in the air and change it all.
Yes. It's so true, isn't it?
Crazy, complex human beings.
Yeah. Was it Tony Robbins, I think, have you ever done the Tony Robbins?
Yes, it's Tony Robbins' program that
human needs.
He goes into the human needs.
Yeah,
thing,
and this need for... Yep. Yeah, the need for certainty and for uncertainty. And yep. One of the things that I love, and I think I've mentioned this on a show in the past, that he says is that, you know, the greater the levels of uncertainty we can cope, we can live with, the happier we'll be as human beings. And, you know, I can personally vouch for that now, but I know that there was a time in my life where I would have thought, but that's crazy. You know, yes, you want a little bit of change. And you're right. You know, we do have a tendency to engineer change in our lives when things become too, because it becomes boring. If there's too much certainty, then almost, you know, what is the point in getting up in the morning? You know what's going to happen.
That's right.
And I do wonder whether, you know, how much we engineer without realizing it, you know, some of the bigger changes that happen, and we do it subtly without knowing that we're doing it. We don't necessarily sit down and write goals. We don't necessarily sit there and plan for, you know, big things, challenging things to happen. But they do all the same. And I do sometimes wonder whether, well, you know, this self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, do we sometimes create this for ourselves? So
I'm certain that we do, Deborah. I'm certain that we do. We actually have a process going on in our own minds. Maybe sometimes it's by the things that we say. We come home and we say, "I'm not happy with my job. I'm not enjoying my job. It's, you know, I wish I didn't have to go to work today." And suddenly we wake up one day and find that we don't have to go to work anymore because the job's gone.
Yes.
And we do engineer it in that way. I'm certain that that's just part of our own individual ability to create in our own lives. Sometimes we do it consciously, sometimes we do it more often, I think, probably do it unconsciously.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I think, and a lot of people, I mean, I know I've been out in the world quite a lot in my life, and particularly in the last couple of years, you know, I've crossed paths with people who've had big periods of change in their life, and sometimes they're not happy with it. They're not happy with how it's going on. You know, they've been made redundant from a job they've been in for maybe 20 odd years and feel that the rug has been really pulled out from under their feet. And they're not yet at that stage of embracing that as a new experience. And I find it interesting because if you try and say to somebody, well, I think, you know, you might have actually, you know, subconsciously asked for this to happen, you have to duck as they throw things at you.
probably best to be heavily armoured before you attempt that.
Yeah, quite, exactly. Because we don't want to hear it, do we, when we're in the midst of that challenge and upheaval. You know, if you're somebody who has been through a lot of change and challenge in your life and perhaps has a mindset that says, yeah, I create my own experience, then of course we accept it. But there's many people out there who don't think like that. And it can be quite offended that you could suggest that they might actually have deliberately, without intending to, or without consciously intending to, actually brought this into their lives. But I'm with you because I think that we do. I think that we do, you know.
And I think what I look for in that point is the difference between a controlled change and an uncontrolled change.
Mm.
The controlled changes are the ones that we initiate, the
yeah.
ones that we start. We decide that we're going to change our lives. I can remember sitting Millennium evening, December 31st, 1999. I was on my own, having just finished an IT department year 2000 rerun, and we were just waiting for the for the year 2000 bug to kick in, and of course it didn't. It was the biggest damp squib ever.
Yeah.
And I ended up at a black tie ball on my own because it was the only way I could get a hotel room. And I got up the next morning and I said, I am going to change my life. I'm going to do something different with it. I'm going to get a story that excites me and that I feel proud telling in company.
Mm.
And at that point, I started doing a whole load of different things. And that's controlled change, the sort of change where you take care, take hold of something that's not working and turn it into something that is working.
Mm, yeah.
But we also then have this the idea of uncontrolled change, the change that's outside of our control, whether it's losing a job, losing a relationship, injury, poor health. The thing that we need to do is to get ourselves back so that we feel, in some sense, in control of that change.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It really does. Because that's that is the hardest part, isn't it, when we feel out of control?
Yes,
and
it is.
And that's when often we resist the process of change because we want to feel in control again, because that's where our comfort is. That's where our sense of security actually lies. And yet, it's often in these, big times of upheaval that we can get the greatest gifts from them.
Oh, absolutely right. And that I guess, is the beauty of it all. We may not be able to change the fact that wife's just left, that the job's disappeared. We might not be able to change the fact that we're in financial difficulties, and yet we can take control of our own life and decide that we can get some meaning out of it.
Mm.
In all of this, and there are some things that have happened in my life, I suspect the same is true for you, Deborah, it's those things that have happened in our life that we wouldn't wish on our worst enemy.
Yes, definitely, yeah.
And yet, when we look back on those things, we look back and say, those were the times that I grew.
Yeah, yeah.
The muscles started to flex, and we started to become stronger and more powerful. The amount of change that's happened to me in the last 5 or 6 years, which have been in some ways been incredibly joyful years, and in some ways been incredibly hard years, the amount of strength and increased wisdom that I've got out of that experience has been phenomenal. And I'm not sure if I look back, would I do it again? honestly, maybe not. And yet, I know the gift that it's given me.
Yes, yeah, that's it. That's it. It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I know sometimes I say I would do it all again. But I say, well, would I? If there was an easier way to get the lessons, then, and I knew that, then I probably would take the easier way. Who wouldn't?
And I suspect that there isn't an easier way to get
your No, that's it. I love, it's something that you said in your blog, talking about actually controlled and uncontrolled change. You said that oftentimes we consciously decide that we need to make a change. We carefully weigh up the options and step forward into a new world and into a new opportunity. Or in some cases, we take a spur of the moment decision and hurl ourselves freely into a new world. But in both of those cases, we're in control. We decide. Other times, the universe seems to decide for us. It may be illness or unexpected financial difficulty. It might be a relationship that suddenly inexplicably changes shape, a marriage that disintegrates, a friendship that goes wrong, a love affair that fizzles out, leaving sadness and a sense of emptiness. And, I love that you say about the universe seems to decide for us. And I do sometimes think that if we deliberately try and stay stuck for a really long time, because oftentimes we know, we feel that things aren't right. It can be that you get up and you go to the 9-to-5 job. I know we've both done that, because there's this sense of, well, I've got to pay the bills, I've got to pay the mortgage, I've got to be a responsible adult and go and do this. But with every second that you're there, it's like a little part of you dies every time you get in the car or get on the train to go to that place of work. Another little part of you dies because it's not really who you are. It's not really your destiny, if you like, your purpose in life. You know that, but sometimes that overriding sense of responsibility, if you like, keeps us stuck, keeps us in that place. And I do think that sometimes if the more we become aware of that, if we don't then choose to take option one and have control change, then the universe will come along and say, right, you're not doing it. Okay. We're just going to sell up the company.
I think there is a place for deciding that for right now my purpose is paying the bills, and I think that's fine to do that. To decide
yes,
that you know, right now my responsibility is to my family, or even to be truthful, my responsibility is to me to make sure that I am safe and I'm secure and my bills are getting paid. But sometimes we need to know that there's an end point to that. And that's the thing that yeah. sucks at our souls and sucks at our hearts and draws the life out of us, is when we look into the future and say, I'm going to be stacking shelves for the next 20 years.
Yeah.
And that's just step out of that into something that is exciting, that thrills your heart, and that really is, as Joseph Campbell said, that is following your bliss, that is that
yes.
thing that you want to pursue. I love the fact that that one of the things that you do is face painting.
Face painting. That was what I did in my 20s. Come on, if you think you're hard enough, you know, that sort of thing.
Oh, you do discover things about people on these radio shows.
That's it. Nowhere to hide.
but that's one sense, one side of this. I'm sure you must have had these conversations, mustn't you? That, why are you doing that?
What's yes. that? Yeah.
What does that give you? What does that do for you? And I suspect that you have a very gleeful answer for that, don't you?
Well, funny you should say that. When I first announced that I was doing it, and it was on Facebook, you know, I'm starting face painting and it's great, I actually had an email from a very concerned ex-client as a coach. I just better qualify that statement, actually, in case anyone was wondering what sort of ex-client. From my coaching days, which are now behind me, saying, But what are you doing? You know, you're a great coach. You can't give that up to go and paint faces. That's just, I don't understand. And I said, well, right. And my reply was, right now, I'm not giving anything up. Right now, I'm welcoming something new in.
Yes.
Because I have a desperate need to be creative, to be creatively fulfilled. And I'm not happy because I'm not doing it. And I know that I need to do that. So for me, starting face painting, and at the time, it was just going to be a little hobby on the side. The universe seemed to have other plans for me in that I get quite a lot of work, you know, and I'm now starting to get some quite big contracts as a face painter. That wasn't, I wouldn't call that control. The deciding to go on the course, pay over the money and learn how to do it, and then buy my equipment, yes, that was controlled. Everything else has just happened as a follow-on from that. And, you know, but it's interesting, as you say, yeah, I did get quite a lot of people, little comments about, but why, you know, why are you doing that? I don't understand. It's so vastly different from what you've done in the past. But then coaching was vastly different from programming computers, which was what
yes.
I did in the past. So similar for you as well.
You followed so much the same route as me.
Yeah, exactly.
You got face painting. I don't know. there is a process. I suspect you've come across this at least in some of the things that I've written, Deborah. And there's a process, a almost a wheel of life that we go through as we progress and as we grow, as our experiences change. That's to do with the roles that we take on.
Mm.
And we do have a moment in our lives where we this destroyer figure comes up in our lives, and we have to tear things down. Archetypally, of course, it's the midlife crisis that we go through, and it is typically often that sort of age that we
yeah. you know,
mid-30s, 40s, mid-40s, that we go through a destroyer process where we have to tear things down. And we cycle around this one all the time. And then after doing that, after tearing things down, we find a way of building it up, and build it up into something new. But what you've done is to step that one step beyond. Because everything's changing and we're moving through these cycles in our life, we find, particularly when we get to that to the middle of our life, I'm a little bit further on than you are, another few roles come into play, and it's those the more magical roles that start to appear in our life. We start to learn how to rule our life and how to take control of our life, and then suddenly we seem to throw that all away and become far more magical.
Yes.
To the point at which you've taken it, which is to the jester role, where you're looking back and almost laughing at your life.
Yes, yeah, that sounds very resonant.
The old people who just looked back and nothing worries them anymore.
Yeah.
And one of the things that change does, and the pain of some of these changes does, is to free us from, almost free us from the fear. Once you've stared debt and bankruptcy in the face, it ceases to have any hold over you.
Yes.
And you can laugh at it.
Yeah.
I was just reading one of my great teachers and mentors, Neil Donald Walsh, was talking about his experience of being out on the streets in Portland, Oregon.
Mm.
And he said a few years after that, he lost most of his retirement fund. And his reaction was, hey, I've been on the streets once. I can do it again. It's no biggie.
Yeah, yeah.
And we start to almost become irresponsible, in a sense, because nothing matters in quite the same way. We know we can deal with it.
So true. I've never heard it put like that before. I love that. That is so very, very true, yeah.
But you do. I think we do find, we almost have this progression towards learning to deal with things.
Yes.
So that we can look back and laugh at them. And there's so many things I can look back and laugh at because I've been through those experiences.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
cease to have the sting. They cease to have the pain for me anymore.
Yes. And this is, I mean, for me, this is, you know, the difference between wisdom and knowledge. You know, was that saying, you know, to know and not to do is not to know? Something along those lines. And age gives us that valuable experience. We may intellectually understand things. We may have seen other people go through experiences and often judge the other people on how they've handled experiences. Or how, you know, how did you get yourself into that mess in the first place? That was, you know, irresponsible or whatever. But until you've actually gone through an experience like that yourself, you don't really know what it's like. You can't really know what it's like. And coming out the other side, you have the wisdom of that experience, which then enables you to rise above it. And I, you know, I love that idea of the joke. I'm thinking I should get myself a hat with bells now, actually. But but you know, to be able to look back and yes, laugh at it. And yes, I think you're so true, isn't it, that we then do become almost more rebellious and develop more of a what the hell attitude. What's the worst that could happen? It takes on a whole new meaning, doesn't it?
If you think about it almost mythologically, when you're presented with a problem, which mythologically is the dragon, when the dragon turns up in your life, you know, if you're in a kind of a warrior mode, then your tendency is to kill the dragon. If you're in this a ruler mode, then you'll try and find a way of using the dragon and making use of it and employing it, and you know, suddenly it becomes your
yes.
heating system for the castle. When you get to the point at which you, you're starting to become the jester, the fool, look back and laugh at it, then it becomes a case of playing tricks on the dragon, of enjoying the experience of having fun with
yeah.
that dragon, with that problem. And it's almost at that point we step into control again, don't we? Because it can't hurt you if all you're doing is playing tricks on it.
Yeah, it's so very true. I'm in pondering mode now. And I'm thinking,
that's
actually...
Scary.
Yeah, it's always scary, especially when I ponder. And yeah, I think for many people who are listening, they might actually be able to, you know, really resonate with this from the perspective that often it is that, you know, the first times that we go through a really big period of change, that it is the scariest. But it can be that, you know, you could get into your 40s, 50s, even 60s, and have a particular area of your life where you've never had a significant amount of change. I'm thinking immediately here that if you've been, you know, if you've been married for 30 years,
yes.
if you're married very young and you've always had that stability of a partner, and then in later life that partner, you know, either the relationship ends, you know, through divorce or through bereavement, and all of a sudden it could be that you've got to face that particular dragon, and what do you do with that, you know, if you've never had to deal with that before. So I think these challenges they come at any time in your life.
They do, and usually the time that we're least expecting them as well, don't they?
Yes, yeah.
Everything's going swimmingly, and then suddenly, it's like you're driving down the motorway, you're doing a decent 70 miles an hour, and you suddenly change down from forth into reverse and the engine leaps out the front of the bonnet. It's those moments in our lives when everything's going great and then bang, which is a pile of junk on the hard shoulder. It's that moment where we have to, sometimes all we can do is to stop and breathe.
Yes. And I'm looking at your blog here, actually, and I think this is a beautiful paragraph to read out, actually. On the surface, these things may either seem as welcome or unpleasant, as joyful or painful change. And yet each one of them hides the simple truth that each one of them is precipitated by a simple call deep within our beings, stronger even than a desire to survive, the desire to evolve. Genetically programmed inside us, hard-coded into our DNA, is the biological, emotional, and spiritual imperative to grow, to become more than we are, to change our lives, to step into more than we currently are, to become closer to that image that lies deep within us. In the same way that an acorn is genetically programmed to grow into an oak tree, in the same way that deep within every single caterpillar is the evolutionary structure that causes it to die and become a butterfly, the same process lies at the heart of every human being, to grow, to change, to learn, to develop, to evolve. And I don't know whether I was reading it, Tim, in your blog or with somewhere else about, you know, that we take it for granted about a butterfly, that, you know, a caterpillar becomes a butterfly and we just take that process for granted without realizing that it's, as you were saying earlier, that destroyer energy, that's exactly what has to happen in that process within the cocoon.
It's quite incredible what happens to a caterpillar when it turns into, before it turns into a butterfly, in that I'd almost thought when I was younger, a couple of years ago, maybe, that it's a bit like little bit like Transformers. You know, that the caterpillar in some way kind of unfolds itself in some sort of magic construction set and turns into a butterfly. But if you think about it, they're pretty different beasts.
Yeah.
And what happens is that the caterpillar actually turns into almost a gooey, mushy mess, unrecognizable as either a butterfly or a caterpillar. And then re-engineers itself, reborn into a butterfly. But it has to go through that real dying process, ceasing to be to have any identity as a caterpillar in order to become a butterfly.
And I love that gooey, mushy mess. I think I've been through that gooey, mushy mess.
Perfect description of my life. Yes.
Yeah. I recognise that. It's the one where you get through a whole box of Kleenex and a whole big bar of chocolate in one night. On your own.
No, on I'm your not own, yes. I'm not unique after all, am I? And the bottle of wine. Don't forget the bottle of wine.
Yeah, I was just thinking about a bottle of wine as well is often accompanying that. You've got to have something to wash the chocolate down with, haven't you? Or the ice cream or whatever your fix is.
In those moments that everything seems to be almost the worst.
Yeah.
Moment that our lives are finally starting to put themselves back together again.
Mm.
The old story is it's always darkest before the dawn, and I believe that that's true.
Love that phrase.
The moment that it's most painful is the moment that where things are starting to open up for us.
Yeah. Oh, completely. I mean, without going into too much detail, I remember perhaps one of the darkest moments in my life, towards the end of 2006, before I came back to Birmingham. And I had a whole, it wasn't even an afternoon, it was longer than an afternoon. It felt like an eternity, actually. But it was near Christmas and I was due to be having a Christmas party and everything was crumbling around in my life. And I just cancelled the gathering, told everybody I was ill. I kind of was, but not in a physical sense. And I'd locked the doors, I barricaded myself in the house, and I actually just sat in the dark for hours, literally in the darkness, going through this incredible turmoil. And, you know, some of it, to be perfectly honest, was a choice. Do I want to stay or die? You know, it felt at that point in time that everything was so dark and so horrendous that I didn't know whether I had the strength to actually pick myself up and carry on another day. And I went through all of that. Eventually, sort of about 1 o'clock in the morning, decided I'd sleep on it. I hadn't done anything dramatic. you know, and I decided I'd actually had a knife to my wrist, a big knife. Yeah. I'm laughing about this now. And I just had it there in my hand. I eventually went and washed it up, put it back in the drawer, went up to bed, went off to sleep really, really quickly. And I remember I woke up about 4 o'clock in the morning, and it was as if my body was in a state of terror, absolute terror. And it was such a strong, overwhelming emotion. But it was very quick, and it was as if it was sort of clearing something through my system. And I fell back asleep, woke up at 8 o'clock the next morning, got up, and it was like, right, this is what I'm going to do about this situation. This is what I'm going to do about this situation. And I wrote a plan of action and just got on with it. And it was that whole thing, the darkest before the dawn. And things really started to change in my life in a better way after that night. But it was going through that huge pain, which was just exquisitely painful at the time, you know.
Yes.
But to actually come through that and out the other side. And often that's where the courage is, isn't it? Just beyond that, you know, just beyond that darkness is where it's a tiny little pinprick of light that you can barely see through the tears and the snot.
Through the tears and yes. Sometimes the dawn breaks and the dawn is bright and the birds are singing and all is beautiful.
Yeah.
Just beyond the final darkness.
Yeah.
The dawn breaks and it's a grey, cloudy,
yeah,
rainy day.
Yeah. But at
and
least
we have to get up and put one foot in front of another.
Mm.
And then once we've done that, we put another foot in,
yeah,
front of the first foot. And we just keep, sometimes it is just a simple case of keeping walking and keeping faith.
Yeah, yeah, which is, I love that, the quote from Martin Luther King Jr., that, you know, faith is taking the first step even when you can't see the whole staircase.
Yes.
And it really, really is that. And sometimes, you know, so often in life, even when we have control change and we choose to step towards a big goal in our lives, we don't really know exactly how we're going to get there. So often the goals are so big that we can't even comprehend how it could be possible. So we're really day by day stepping one foot in front of another. I think it's a quote from Abraham Lincoln, actually, that says that the good thing about the future is it comes one day at a time. And it's so true. And you know, we sometimes, because we have the capacity of human beings to be aware of time, as you know, in this linear fashion that there is a past, a present, and a future, we have therefore the tendency to live in the past or the future quite often rather than the present. And when it comes to the future, we make it so much bigger than it is because it's not even here yet.
That's right. Right now, we have no problem.
Yes.
In this moment, right now, you do not have a problem. Unless, of course, you're, falling from a bridge, being mauled by a lion, in which case, what on earth are you doing listening to Blog Talk Radio?
Exactly.
But in this moment, right now, we don't have a problem. We have a problem in the future that hasn't happened yet,
yes,
and may not happen. 95% of the things that I predicted would happen haven't happened, and those remaining 5% didn't kill me.
Yes, yeah.
And either we're predicting the future or we're remembering the past.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And neither of those things have any power to hurt us whatsoever.
Mm. So true.
There's nothing that's going to that is going to happen in the future that can hurt me right now. So maybe the future is the time that I need to start dealing with it.
Yeah. That's it.
And I'm not saying don't plan ahead. I'm not saying don't take a care and consideration for the future, but have a sense of perspective.
I think,
and enjoy what's now.
And balance as well. And somebody that I know, very, very interesting, was saying how they always planned everything. They would rarely have any free time. You know, work-wise, everything was planned and they knew what was going to happen every day and meetings, weeks in advance. And as an experiment, they actually left May open as a, you know, let's have a free month. Let's see what would happen if I really didn't plan for a month. And she's been stunned by the amount of amazing opportunities that have come into her life in the month of May as a result of not planning.
Fabulous.
And she actually said herself, you know, I was actually very cynical about all of that. And thought, well, that's ridiculous. You know, you can't function. You can't run a business on that basis. You've got a plan. But she's had just the most amazing month because of not doing it. And I was saying, well, I think it's about having a bit of both in reality, you know, longer term. Yes, there has to be a plan. A plan is a foundation. You know, it's having a foundation, isn't it? Having some sort of structure. And a quote, I actually was quite pleased with this, a quote that I came out with in some programs that Vicky and I were writing for The Real Raw recently, was that even the oceans need a shore to crash against.
Yes.
You know, the sea is wild and it goes all over the place and it's very, very, you know, it has its own free will, it would seem, but it still needs a shore to crash against. And that's what, you know, that balance between a plan and a not plan.
It's interesting if you think about it, though, how much ocean there is and how little shore.
This is very true, actually. I like your thinking there, sir.
You know, there's a huge amount of stuff that goes on out in the ocean. Stuff that we just don't see. We couldn't even conceive of until we discovered aeroplanes and boats and whatever. But
yeah.
There's so much out there that happens. And I think we often do control and command ourselves out of this point at which we have freedom. And I know, going back to this whole concept of archetypes and roles, where we're moving from through destroyer creator through to a point where we want to rule our lives.
Yeah.
And I suspect you found that in your business world, probably back in the IT world, where you're actually in charge of your work life.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you stepped into something else from that point. You stepped into and I see it so many times. We come from the business world into a coaching world, which is where we're starting to create magic.
Yeah.
And suddenly
yeah.
the control is off.
Yeah.
And your friend here has stepped through exactly the same thing, from that moment where everything was completely controlled, well managed, well run, a beautiful, well oiled machine, to the point at which we, by stepping back, we allow some magic in.
Yeah.
Letting go of the control, we let the magic in. And what happens is we then start to notice that, and we allow more and more of that to happen. Because we're not, if something goes wrong, when you're managing your life and you have an off day, we've got to get all of this done by the end of the week, and you have an off day, then you start to feel really tough on yourself if you're not careful.
Yes.
Then we start to feel guilty, and we start to berate ourselves. And oh, for goodness sake, if you hadn't gone out drinking last night, then you know you'd be in far better state today. If can you just focus for a moment? Those moments when I've just actually stepped back from that and said, let's see what happens this week. I'm not going to, you know, if I decide that I'm unproductive today, I'm going to go for a walk.
Yes. Yeah,
and I will just, you know, I'm not going to make myself guilty for not doing anything. Those are the moments when suddenly I've, it was what started this whole blog process on change. To be perfectly honest, was exactly that process. I'm not going to force myself to do anything, and then after a walk in the morning, come back and suddenly the creative energy has started to happen again.
Yeah, another quote which I remember reading very recently. I think it was Abraham Lincoln said, If he knew he had 8 weeks to chop down a tree, he'd spend 6 of them sharpening his axe.
Yes.
And I smiled at that one. I thought, yeah, it's so true. And majority of people in that business environment do the opposite. They spend 6 weeks trying to chop down the tree and only start trying to sharpen the axe when they're exhausted and sweating and they've got blisters on the palms of their hands, you know.
Because we reward action, don't we?
Yeah, that's it. And it's a very different, it's almost counterintuitive, isn't it? But it isn't. It's just that the society that we've been brought up in is all about, yes, it's all about rewarding action. Do this and then this will happen. And actually, life, nature, I mean, look outside of the window and you see magic everywhere. Every tree, it just has faith that it will grow.
Yes,
you know, the plants have faith
happens.
That it will open. The seasons, you know, in winter when it's dark and there's very little sunlight, you know, we just have to have faith that the plants will blossom again and that, you know, every time you plant seeds to grow vegetables, it's faith that actually has that trust that, yes, they won't all sprout and become, you know, edible, particularly my potatoes a couple of years ago. They're very cute, though. They were the size of tiny marbles. There were 10 of them, and I could fit them in the palm of my hand. Baby potatoes. But anyway, you know, we need to have that faith that these things will happen. And, you know, I heard somebody once say that it's not having faith is like planting seeds for carrots and digging them up every day to see whether they're growing. And ultimately, when you do that, obviously, I'm not a gardener, but you'll destroy them. They'll never grow if you do that. And that's a lot of what it is when you're going through a process of change, is actually having that faith that the outcome will, you might not know what the outcome is going to be, but that there will be one, and that in some way or another, it will actually be good. It will actually be better.
And I think that's also key as well, is understanding that whole thought that it's going to be better. We are, if we're not careful, very fearful beings.
Yes.
And when change happens, particularly if we didn't plan it, then we start to get fearful and we start to become afraid, particularly when that change is painful, when something's happened that we don't welcome, whether it's relationship failure or bereavement or financial problems, whatever it is, if it's not welcome, then we start to become fearful about it. But in my world and in my belief that everything is happening with purpose in our lives. A friend of mine used to say, everything's working out perfectly. And even if we can't see that, even if we can't understand that, at some level in our life, things are working out perfectly. Boy, does that take some faith to hang on to that sometimes.
Absolutely, it does, doesn't it? I mean, I think I can only speak for myself, and well, I know that other friends have felt the same, that sometimes you do lose this faith. You do go through these periods where you think, I can't believe that I believed that. This is ridiculous. It's all going wrong. Pass me more chocolate.
I look back at the... I can remember vividly one evening, I'd struggled. My business had started to fall apart, and I had to walk about 7 or 8 miles across town, having sold my car. But I didn't have, even though I'd sold my car, the money wasn't available, so I hadn't even got enough money for the bus fare to get into town. So I had to walk for 7 or 8 miles. I can remember the crushing sense of failure that I had at that point.
Yeah.
But a few short months later, I was in a position where I could shut up home. And as you know, I travel around the world for 12 months, going to see some incredible sights, having an incredible experience that I would never have done if my business had succeeded.
Yeah.
I'd never have put myself through that whole glorious, gorgeous experience of so many different cultures and so much adventure and excitement that would never have happened if that process of pain hadn't happened. And there's so many other things that, you know, I can rap for hours on what came out of that that disastrous moment. Would I have put myself through it ever again? Do I wish that had never happened? Sure, because it was really, really uncomfortable. And yet, the things that came out of it were so incredible, so exciting, so thrilling that it was worth it.
Yeah. It's so true, isn't it? It's that, you know, the perfection of hindsight, isn't it? To be able to look back and see that thread, that magical thread that weaves throughout life, that, well, if this hadn't have happened, then I wouldn't have met that person. And if I hadn't have met that person, then I wouldn't have gone there. And then I wouldn't have had that opportunity. And, you know, all roads lead us to where we are right now. And I think it's very much, I mean, you know, the closing paragraph of the blog that I've got here, you talk about welcoming change, you know, and talk about what does it mean for us individually. In fact, you know, I'm just going to rewind a little bit, because I think this is beautiful what you've written about humanity. I do believe that humanity is evolving. I think it's happening underground as we change our social expectations. It seems to me that, despite appearances, that the individual being is becoming more loving, more accepting, more compassionate, more self-aware. Our potential for stepping into love is finding more and more outlets, exposing cruelty and harshness, violence and unforgiveness to the light of love and showing it for what it is, an opportunity for healing. I think it's happening at a deeply spiritual level as we begin to understand how our interrelatedness actually works, as we explore our hidden world and discover the truth of intuition and interconnectedness, the power of the collective mind. We're discovering that we are more powerful together than we ever were apart. We're discovering the power of joint effort and finding that individually we are powerful, yet when we explore the power unleashed together, we are unstoppable. And, you know, I read your blog and I just thought, Tim, you're a hero. You've got to come on the show. Just beautifully written. And I thought, it's so, so true. And, I mean, recently, a few months ago, I went to see Lynn McTaggart, author of The Field.
Mm-hmm.
In Birmingham, amazing woman. And her new book, The Bridge, is really all about this. It's about this interconnectedness that's happening, that, as you say, more and more people are... There are more causes out there than ever before. I see this so much on social media, particularly on Twitter, the amount of support, the amount of campaigns for, you know, for goodness, for compassion, for kindness, to help people to make a difference. And it's daily. And I do think that so much of our ability to handle change is determined by what we choose to focus on.
Yes.
You know, there is light and dark. There is always light and dark. What do you choose to focus on? Do you want to look into the light and, you know, have the dark behind you? Or do you want to look into the darkness and have the light illuminate you from behind? You know, and say, right, we can use this to kind of cut through that. Because the two intertwine. You can't get away from that. They almost need each other to actually exist. But so often people just focus on the darkness without actually seeing all the good bits that are out there.
Yes.
And there's so much.
And I it's just a sense that I have of what's happening at a global level, in and amongst all the financial meltdown and the crisis around energy.
Yes.
In and around the wars and the struggles that we have, the famines that are there, somewhere along the line, it feels to me as if we, as a planet, are evolving.
Yeah, yeah.
Those crises are causing us to step into more of the truth of who we are as humanity.
Yes.
And yes, of course, we have the exceptions. We know we have the exceptions. We have still have shocking and awful places where deeply dark and hurtful things are done in the name of humanity. And yet, it just feels as if, you know, if 60 years ago we were in the midst of a world war, would we get the same response to that nowadays, because people have started to question?
Yeah.
Have we become wiser? And it's very trendy to say that we haven't become wiser, we've lost the wisdom of the ancients, and I think there is a sense in which that's true. But I think also we have grown. We have become more. And we don't see the fruition of that yet. We don't see the absolute reality of that yet. But for me, it's springtime. Things are growing. The shoots of something new are happening.
Yes.
One of the things that we did throughout the Industrial Revolution, and I'm not faulting the Industrial Revolution, I'm not faulting technology, I'm in no way, as I suspect you know, in no way am I Luddite. technology, give me an iPad, give me an iPhone.
Yes, I
love it. But that was a point at which we started to be able to use technology and to be able to use tools to control our world in a new way.
Yeah.
Which then meant that we didn't need to change ourselves and to evolve ourselves. And now, in a sense, we are coming to the end of that.
Yes.
That level of technological mastery. And we're finding ourselves stepping into a level of emotional and spiritual mastery. And so I think that some of the problems that are facing us right now are going to be solved not by our stepping into a new level of technology, but by our discovering the powers within ourselves to fix that problem.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely on that. And one of the things I have done some work with teenagers over the last few months, and you know, I see that spark in them, that creative genius of ideas that they just come up with, that they're not blinded by what's not possible.
It's interesting. My son was put for an analysis with his school, because he is very differently wired. He had a fantastic, very bright, amazing, intelligent young man now, but he's wired completely differently. And as I look back and see what he brings to the table, I can see that thread of evolution through me and back to my mother. I can see it. Yes, she was different from her peers. In the same way, you know, I sense that I've brought some of that along. To see the fruition in David is actually quite incredible, because he is just an indigo child, if that makes, you know, that has any meaning. He's almost from a different planet. And that's what we're getting ourselves to the point where, you know, intuitive solutions to problems are going to appear. We're going to start to be able to draw on this, the concepts of the collective consciousness, to discover the fact that we are not just emotionally connected, but deeply spiritually, deeply, almost physically, scientifically, technically connected in one collective consciousness that has multiple, a myriad of different outpourings in individual people. And we're going to start to be able to explore that. We're going to start to see that, how that changes the world for the better.
So I think we looking at this from a very positive perspective, we have such a unique opportunity for growth at this time on our planet, because to our knowledge, you know, to the best of our knowledge, never has there been a time when there are so many people living upon the surface of the earth at one time. And, you know, I was having a conversation with a friend a year or so ago now, who was sort of questioning this, you know, for want of a better word, as I think the word can be misused quite a lot, you know, spiritual matters, you know, the concept of spirituality, of the collective mind and all of this, and sort of not comfortable with this at all. And I said to her, I said, you know, I completely understand that. Let's look at it from a different perspective. What if this is just the next step in human evolution that is essential for us to be able to live together and continue to exist on the planet? Because we don't have the situations we had in the past. You know, things are different now. As you say, that the Industrial Revolution, it's actually given us, to a great degree, a huge sense of control over our planet, over the dominant. We don't. Mother Earth is still very much in charge, you know, as we see with the floods that are happening here in the UK at the moment. You don't want to mess with her. She's a woman. But, you know, we do have that sense of, yes, that can be very difficult and, you know, devastating for people. But we're often, we can be rescued and, you know, things can be rebuilt. We know how to do all of that. What we haven't yet learned is how to actually coexist peacefully. And with all the technology and all the will in the world, you can't learn it in that way. And we've got this opportunity now, because there are so many people and such a diversity of cultures and beliefs on the planet at any one time, to actually bring all of that together and learn from it. And I really think that part of this evolution is about that.
I'm certain that there is a learning process that we need to step through, and there are choices that we need to take, some very clear choices that we need to take in the way that we look after Mother Earth, in the way that we play together on this planet, the choices that we make about the way that we share our resources, in the way that we make decisions that are sustaining and life-affirming and consider the future. And yet there is, to me at least, a knowledge that humanity wants to get it right.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, very much so. We're trying really hard.
And I think we're learning. Mm. As humanity, we're learning.
We are dealing with a
perpetual change. Yes.
Yeah.
This perpetual process of life unfolding over and over again, so that it never becomes static, never becomes dull, at an individual level, and at a national level, at a planetary level. We are, I'm convinced, learning a new step into our own evolution as a race.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's tremendously exciting. I really am looking forward to seeing what are the next steps? What is happening? How soon and how quickly will it happen? Because I think the other thing that's happening is the pace of change. We didn't really talk about this very much, but the pace of change is accelerating as well.
Yeah. I mean, something, this might seem a bit random and offbeat, but I don't know whether you've noticed this with your you know, son's generation. I've noticed it with, you know, a lot of youngsters, teens and in their 20s. Hugging is normal, even in Britain, where you usually have to have some sort of, you know, physical passport to actually touch another person.
Signed agreement beforehand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, is it okay? You know, I have this personal space, which is about 20 foot around. But no, hugging is a normal thing. It used to be shaking hands or, you know, a nod would suffice. But I see it so much more that it's very normal for youngsters to hug one another and connect in that way. And I think it's a beautiful thing. I really, really do.
Isn't that interesting that we blame technology in one sense for a breakdown in communication and the fact that we spend so much time behind screens we never actually meet each other. But actually what's happening, as you observe, is that people are getting more compassionate.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they want more hugs because they're too busy looking at computer screens all the time. Hug me, I need a hug.
That might be true, but I actually think that what's happening is that they are generally becoming kinder.
Yes, no, I agree. Yeah, definitely.
Sometimes our young people get a bad rap. We hate the fact that they spend so much time behind the computer. We hate the fact that they we feel threatened by them. We hate the way that they spell and their ability to adopt new technology. But aren't they absolutely awesome?
Yeah.
And incredible.
Well, they are.
And full of hope.
Yes, definitely. That was one of the things for me that was so, so, so powerful with the project that I was working on with sixth form lads. So that's lads who are 16, 17 years old. And that's for the American listeners who don't know what sixth form is over here. But yeah, you know, some of the project ideas that they were coming out with, I was nearly in tears. I really was. It was a definite damp eye moment, you know, listening
tumbling,
to their
it?
Passion. And as I say, that the fact that it hasn't occurred to them that it's not possible, they're just going to do it. You know, one was a project that one lad had come up with that he wanted to actually roll out over the next 5 years into every school in the UK to help youngsters have the confidence to go for interviews and get jobs. And he'd single-handedly decided that he was going to do this. And it was amazing, you know, and the teacher, one of the teachers said to him, well, you know, 5 years might be a little bit ambitious. And he just, the look that he gave him, I wanted to cheer and go, yay! You know, just, yeah, the look that the child gave the teacher, as if to say, don't tell me what's, you know, what's possible and isn't. I know what I want, you know, I know what I can do. And, yeah, we wouldn't be here now, actually, if it wasn't for that kind of thinking. It's that sort of thinking that's actually driven humanity positively and created so much. We're coming towards the end. An hour, so quickly. I would like to close with, I'm just reciting you here, Tim. I'm going to close with what you've commented on about individuality, because, again, I think this is really lovely. So we talked earlier about the collective mind and the power of unleashed together we are unstoppable. But what does that mean for us individually? Learn to welcome change, because whether it is welcome or unexpected, whether it initially brings joy or brings a sense of loss and pain, when we yield to it and allow it to change us deep within, it's in those moments that we grow, that we learn more of who we are. It is in those moments, and never in the times of ease and comfort, that we grow and develop, that we discover what we are capable of, and where we demonstrate the truth about what it is to be truly, incredibly, wonderfully, powerfully human. And I love that, and I think because we are all incredibly wonderful, powerful people and human beings, and it's just it's remembering that, isn't it? It's going through the amnesia and actually, you know, remembering that the power within ourselves. And yeah, I think that's wonderful. Now
we are incredible.
Yeah, definitely. Tim, thank you so much for playing tonight.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
You're very welcome, Deb. I had a wonderful time.
It's been really great. Now, if you're listening at home, if you would like to check Tim out, so to speak, he has a website, which is www.timothyhodgson.com. I'll post all of this on the Facebook page as well. He's got some books you are an Amazon author, aren't you, actually?
You can buy my books through Amazon. I have two at the moment, one of which is to do with setting up your own coaching business, if that's the business that you're in, and I have another on the power of self-hypnosis. But there's some other stuff on there as well on the website. You can take a look at the store pages there, and there's some wonderful and fabulous stuff, including a new program that I'm starting to roll out on the whole question of change.
Excellent. Perfect. There you go. I will post all of that information on our Facebook page. And just in case you've randomly tuned into the show and you don't know where to find us, you can find us on facebook.com, The Real Raw, or on our blog, which is www.therealrawblog.com. So I'm Deborah Carter. This is Monday the 11th of June. I've been joined by Timothy Hodgson, and we've been talking change. And tune in next Monday for more. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah.